You are listening to Legion of Substitute Podcasters, episode 596. Welcome to Darren and Paul's Event Theater, Millennium, Cosmic Odyssey, and Invasion. Episode 596. Did I say 596 at the front?
You did. 596 at the front. Yes. Yes, you did. You're welcome. Anytime.
I could not do that again. I am continuing as has trouble with numbers, lad. I think I did this 2 weeks ago, which for me was last night, which for you is 2 weeks from now.
So it's true.
It will have been.
It will have been something that we have done in the past, but now in the future.
Exactly.
Suck that, Grabois. Suck that. No, kidding. He doesn't listen to the show anymore. He's on it.
Yeah, right? He's
He's listening to it right now, plotting my death. Don't worry.
Over to you, sir.
Hi, everybody. I'm Darren Noel, and tonight I am Bleeding Boy. Mm. No, it's not that time of the month. I got a fancy new razor shaver.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. Cut my neck up good this morning on my way trying to... it's not bad. It's just, I didn't realize at work I've got, like, red marks underneath my Adam's... oh, my. That's actually blood. That is blood. Okay. Let me get some paper towels here.
I'm going to need a new shirt.
No one between my house... the subway ride into work, the trolley ride from the subway station to the office, or people in the office remarked about it.
Yeah, right? Like, all that distance.
No one. It was 9 o'clock when I saw it. I shaved at, like, 6:30. Like, oh, you people are wastes of space.
So is this an electric razor or a...
No, it's a manual. It's one of those fancy ones. It's all black and sleek and masculine looking, but it's got no safety feature on it.
Oh.
So it's just like the razor. Mm-hmm. And I have learned that I need a safety razor today.
Yeah. That's what I...
Doesn't matter how sexy it looks. It's like, nope, that's going to kill me.
And you know what? I totally feel you because I love that stuff. Like, I love the ritual of it and getting it all sort of really nice and clean shaven and all that. But it is now I use a safety razor and I switched to that a number of years ago. Although over the last little while, like when my dad passed, my sister was like, you know, he's got a lot of like electric razors that are in perfectly good condition. So she cleaned them all up and gave them to me. And so I use one of them on occasion, but I still, there's nothing like the proper razor.
True.
But there is a, you know, there is a, it is like, you know, when you learn to drive a stick shift, there is a finesse to it.
True.
And when we forget that finesse.
Or when we're not awake yet.
Yeah, well, there's that.
And hurrying to go to work.
Oh, man.
Yeah, no. I don't have the superpowers to keep my blood on the inside of my body, so.
Yes. Yes, exactly.
It's quite nasty.
Exactly. I mean, that is something that will prepare us well for when we eventually get to Bloodlines.
Must we?
But we are a long way back from that. Of course, those of you who have listened to our event theater episodes in the past will know that this is where we get into extreme detail on all of these events. For example... we did each issue of Crisis as its own episode.
Because it warrants it. I mean, it
totally did. And, you know, because we needed that, I still remember us both getting all choked up with Supergirl.
Oh,
you know?
My God, that Supergirl episode. I cried like a baby.
Yeah, that was, I mean, just.
I mean, I couldn't finish it. You had to finish it for me. Why am I getting choked up about a book from 1986?
Because
I know the ending.
Because it was that good.
Oh my God, it was horrible. And I was so manly that day.
So and you know, so we've, you know, and then we went into detail on Legends. And now we are going to not do that kind of level of detail. We're going to kind of give you overviews of the next few events. And so this week and next week, we'll get into that. This week, we're going to start with one that basically is what pulled Darren and Paul's event theater to a halt is Millennium.
It's Millennium. We don't like it.
I think we've been on record for that many times.
We're doing the great yada yada yang of the events that were, shall we say, I mean, Legends was mediocre. Let's be honest.
I agree.
And these are not as great. I think Invasion's the closest to a great one.
Yeah.
But yeah, certainly doesn't have like the gravitas of Crisis.
I sometimes think that's an unfair comparison because
it is, but it's the comparison because that's the one you hold up the candle to, right?
Well, that's what you're going after, right? And
wait till we do JLA Avengers, kids. It's an event comic. We got to get to it.
As eventy as it gets.
Boy howdy.
Yeah.
You just heard Kurt Busiek and George Perez like pop up. What?
Yeah, exactly.
Yes, we are.
Exactly. So let's get into talking a little bit about Millennium. Let's give some context. So so
let's start back in the '70s then on Millennium. Have you thought about this yet? You remember what happened in the '70s, Paul? The 1970s,
yeah.
Saturday morning cartoons. Remember Saturday morning cartoons?
Yeah, Super Friends.
The Super Friends. Do you know what you got with the Super Friends? A group of quote-unquote ethnic superheroes.
Right, which would later become the Global Guardians.
In the Super Friends comic book that eventually got folded into the DC canon via DC Comics Presents. The Superman and the Global Guardians issue, and then they showed up in Crisis.
And exactly. And then they also ended up continuing on later to many of them join the Justice League.
Justice League International. Yeah. But this was kind of, I felt like, a way for them to PC the Global Guardians because these characters become the new Guardians.
Right.
And a lot of the old Global Guardians characters are really like, seriously.
But there's a part of that influence to it for one thing. And then, of course, the other thing of them being the new Guardians is there is a Green Lantern connection to this.
True.
It kind of has that double meaning here because we were looking at heroes from different places, not just the same old here's one from New York, here's one from Metropolis, here's one from Gotham.
There's multiple ones in some places. So
Okay, so
Millennium. Let's do the Cliff Notes version of it. After the Guardians and the Zamorons exiled themselves from this dimension, which happened after Crisis, that's when we got the Green Lantern Corps book.
Yes.
Right? One of each remains and seeks out 12 chosen to become the new Guardians, the robotic Manhunters. I know man escapes the Manhunters. Aim to prevent this, and several supporting characters are revealed to be Manhunters as a matter of course. So this was a weekly published book, eight issues, done by Steve Englehart and Joe Staton. So definitely has comics pedigree on this.
Well, and that's a big Green Lantern pedigree as well because they were both associated with Green Lantern at the time.
So let's start with the bad guys. The Manhunter agents included Dirk Davis, Harry Hadley, Lana Lang, Marcy Cooper, Mary Frances Cassidy, Mr. Smith, not the agent Smith. No.
I'm sorry. Can we just back up? I want to try and place them in context. So Dirk Davis, he was Booster Gold's manager.
Okay. Some of these names I didn't know off the top of my head.
I'm just trying to.
Harry Hadley. I mean, we know Lana Lang, Legion Connection, Insect Queen, right?
and also just the fact that she was.
And this is Man of Steel, Lana Lang, right? At this point. This is 1988.
That's right. That's right. This is the Lana Lang that always knew Superman's secret when he took off, and they kind of played into that a bit here.
Totally.
The Harry Hadley, I don't. That's one I don't know.
Yeah, Marcy Cooper. I don't know who that is either.
Okay, Marcy Cooper. She was, I believe, she was Obsidian's beard. I mean,
that makes sense.
So girlfriend, sorry.
Girlfriend at the time.
So Harry Hadley.
Yeah.
All right.
Harry Hadley.
So Harry Hadley.
Hadley, not Headley.
No. Okay, he was Wade Idling's
So Captain Atom. Yeah,
so that was Captain Atom. As I say, Marcy Cooper, I'm pretty sure she was Obsidian's girlfriend.
That would make sense.
She became like the new Harlequin or something like that.
Okay. Yeah.
Like old school Harlequin with the glasses that
Yeah, the 1940s version, not the Harley Quinn putting Mr. J.
Duella. Duella. That's where I was going. I was going to the most obscure of all of them.
I miss Duella. I miss her. I think she's a great character. Harley Quinn has just made her redundant, unfortunately.
Yeah. So Marcy Cooper, she took over Molly Maine, who was Alan Scott's wife.
Wife, the Harlequin.
Then. Yeah.
Alan Scott would bed a villain in a heartbeat.
Oh, yeah, he would.
And just to throw this in here, his weakness was wood. So think about that.
I know. Yeah, that makes all the sense, doesn't it?
So I'm going to say Mary Frances Cassidy was a Blue Devil.
Mary Frances character? Cassidy, I believe so.
That would be Mr. Cassidy was Blue Devil. I'm guessing.
Oh yeah, okay. And she was his aunt or something like that.
Okay. Mr. Smith is so.
No,
vague.
I'm sorry. She was Dan Cassidy's brother or sister.
Oh, the sister. Okay. Brother, sister. Sister, brother.
Sister, brother. Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
I didn't know he was from Utah, but okay. Mr. Smith. I don't know who Mr. Smith is. That sounds so vague as to be kind of pulling my leg. So, and Rudy West, I'm guessing, was from Wally West's Flash run.
Wally's dad, yeah.
Okay. Rocket Red number 7, the original Rocket Red that joined the JLI.
Yeah.
Remember, he was there for like 3 issues and then revealed to be a Manhunter.
That's right.
I guess we should talk about the ad trades for this. Is they had like a half-page ad for Millennium, and underneath it, it had 3 characters in a book and said, which one of these is a Manhunter? And it was always one that was obviously, no, there's no way they're going to turn that person into a Manhunter. And then there were 2 others who were like, well, maybe. So they always had this going. Mrs. Wootenhofer. Remember Mrs. Wootenhofer?
I do not.
Maxwell Lord's assistant in Justice League.
Yes.
And she shoots the bastard and didn't do a good enough job, apparently. Because had she killed Maxwell Lord, we wouldn't have that problem later. And we'll get to that in Event Theater.
Yeah, for sure. Mr. Smith worked for Ferris Aircraft.
Oh, so Greenland.
And the way he was drawn kind of looked like Agent Smith might have come from Smith. That. Yeah.
That figures.
Yeah. So that's where he came from. Who was else?
Miss Hunter. I don't know who Miss Hunter is. This is as much as I got off the. We got a lot of this off of DC Wiki today or Wikipedia.
Okay. Well, I've got a few others then.
Cool. And Dr. Helga Jace.
Helga Jace was from the Outsiders.
Outsiders, exactly. And of course, dear Laurel Kent, in the 30th century. As the Legion's Manhunter, which we've done that in the regular episodes.
Exactly. Interestingly, this doesn't give all of them.
I couldn't find a complete list.
So I've got also Arnold Beck, and he was Overthrow. Was in the I believe he was in Blue Beetle.
I was gonna guess like. Shazam for CC Beck or something. So.
Donald Dan Richards. That seems an unusual nickname, who was actually the grandfather of Marcy Cooper, and was also a sleeper agent. He had the dog Thor. He was Dan Richards was like the original Manhunter, basically, like before.
Oh, that's right.
Like with the Freedom Fighters and All Star Squadron, and so.
I mean, there's been more Manhunters practically than almost Green Lanterns.
Absolutely, yeah. You can
you can shake a stick at them.
Exactly.
So.
and so you should. Of course, Karen Grace from Suicide Squad.
Oh yeah, Dr. Karen Grace.
Might have been the one that pissed me off most.
Yeah, I can see that because she was invented way back, 1950s?
Yeah. Yeah.
Before I didn't that run of Suicide Squad that she was in was before Justice League debuted.
Yeah. So. Yeah, for me, one of the problems the Manhunters are actually the biggest, the sleeper agents are actually probably the biggest problem I have with the series overall.
Yeah.
Because they was Rudy West really that well used?
No, probably not.
Probably not. But Lana Lang, like, come on. Like,
yeah. I some of them, they chose some characters where it was just shock value. I think Dr. JC is one of those.
Yeah, I agree.
She had been around since Terra and Geo-Force were created.
Yeah.
And I think they knew Outsiders was coming to an end sales-wise, and they wanted to go out with a bang. So, like, okay, let's turn... We might use the heroes again one day, but Dr. JC as
and that was the last issue of that of the regular series, was it not?
Yeah, we're gonna get to that. Yep.
Okay. Fair enough. Anyway, so bunch of Manhunter sleeper agents, and it seemed to be kind of their way of everyone had to come up with one, and then you had the like we said, like Laurel Kemp was the one that didn't go off at the right time.
Yeah, her timer was.
And I get
She was the VCR that was stuck at 12 o'clock.
And you know, that was the thing. Even Levitz wasn't immune to that shit, right?
True.
It's like,
because Legion was their number two selling book. You had to have the event in it.
Yeah, and shoehorning in an event like that, it just...
He had to pick someone to be a traitor.
And, hey, an easy one, because...
And he had to get rid of all the Superman ties. Exactly. So, okay, Laurel Kent it is. So, it would have been better had it been, like... Not that I would like this, but Quizlet or one of the new Legionnaires, that would have made a lot more sense.
And it would have been reminiscent of when Karate Kid and Jackie and Nemesis Kid and Feral Angel,
totally.
Right?
Yeah. Like this... Well, they were trying to set that up with Sensor Girl being, the scary one, the traitor.
Yeah, exactly. And maybe it was for him a good way of shuffling away the it's like, see, she was never related to Superman. She just told us she was, and we believed it. And
villains lie, really?
Yeah, right. What?
So basically all these Manhunters are running around trying to kill all the people who the Guardian and Samaron are trying to elevate into their next, immortal race of people.
Yeah.
And those people included Betty Clawman, Takeo Yakata, Harbinger. Remember Harbinger?
Yeah.
She had nothing to do after Crisis. Well, they found a job for her. Jiang Po, Nikolai Latikov, Celia Winward, Salima Baranazar, Jean Wellen Croft, Gregoria de la Vega, Tom Kalmaku, otherwise known as "quote unquote" Pie Face. From Green Lantern, and the Floronic Man of all characters,
Jason Woodrue. Yeah.
Yep. So Salima was stoned by a mob for heresy. Nikolai was executed by secret police in Russia. Can't have anyone being, or secret police for whatever country. It definitely sounds of the Russian. Brand of name there. And then the heroes divide to protect the other immortals, like you do in these type of situations.
Yeah.
Jiang becomes a character named Gloss. Takeo becomes Ram, which was very, he was the data dude.
Yes.
So Gregorio becomes Estraño. Estraño. Celia becomes Jet, and Betty Clawman becomes one with the planet.
And she's like Dreamtime or something like that.
Totally, totally.
Oh, yeah, because she was an Aboriginal Australian. Mm-hmm. And
Gloss, I think, was Chinese, and Takia was Japanese, and Gregorio was Brazilian, wasn't he?
Yes, I think so.
Definitely from South America or Latin America. Celia was from Jamaica, I believe, and he became Jet. Floronic Man changes his name to become Floro. Tom Kalmaku declines the powers, but they give him a defensive set of powers anyway for his own protection.
Right.
So he had that, and Harbinger, you know, is basically she still has her powers, but she now has a destiny to lead these new Guardians, basically. And the big change out of Millennium, because none of these characters really went anywhere after
this. No, like they had their own series for a while, but I can't think of any of them that we've seen since.
They basically die off screen a lot. I know in a JSA story with Roulette.
No, well, that's what Johns did in that series. Yeah.
You know, that's Jeff Johns going, no one's going to use these characters, so I'm going to kill them off here, off panel. Yeah. The changes really were the Outsiders. They disband after this book is over. Metamorpho is pronounced dead. Looker loses her powers, and Halo is in a coma.
That's so Geo-Force
disbands the Outsiders, and that book is no more. And there you go. There's Millennium. Aren't you glad we didn't do eight episodes on it?
Oh, good Lord. Yeah, exactly. it was a tough read. And I found them all a little while back.
It was a little slow in plotting, for sure.
Well, for and I found I found that they were trying to, they were spending a lot of time doing far too little. And
I would agree with that.
Yeah, there were parts of it that were really problematic, and this whole sleeper agents thing, just no.
The only good thing about this is this book came out weekly, so it was over in 2 months. It was over
very quickly, yeah.
Yeah, so.
And the results of it were over fairly quickly as well.
Oh, totally. Lincoln and you missed it, so. Yeah. Yay, new Guardians! Who are they? What? So, not good. So, Cosmic Odyssey, this one's even more forgettable.
Okay, so this one, I actually read this for the first time last week.
Okay. Why don't you give a summation of it? Because it's probably better than I found.
I'm not entirely sure about that. Interestingly, my whole thing with this was that, the reason I didn't read it is because when I was a kid at the time, I was 18.
We were kids back then.
Let's be real.
Comparatively,
Seriously.
18-year-old kids.
Yeah, so it was written by Jim Starlin. Yay, awesome. Love Jim Starlin. And I was like, but it's Mike Mignola. I did not like his art at the time. I've gone on record saying, back in the day, I also had no appreciation for Kirby and that stuff because I was a kid.
Me either. Yeah. I didn't have any appreciation for that stuff.
And, at the time. Now I love Mignola on Hellboy and that sort of thing. I enjoyed him on Gotham by Gaslight, but not at the time. And it took me a while to come around to that art style.
Mm-hmm.
Now I think, what a stupid kid I was. But our tastes change, and we.
Mm-hmm.
It evolves.
We get with it.
Yeah, because I was like, if it's not Pat Broderick or Keith Giffen, it's dog shit. Oh, and George Perez too, Jorge Perez. but if it's not the three of them, I'm not interested.
I'm not reading it. Yeah.
So,
but you want to know my summary of this story?
Yes.
It's three words: New God Shenanigans.
Yeah. Now, and remember, like at the time. No, you're not wrong. You're not wrong at all.
I know. Right? It's basically created by Metron.
Yeah, so he basically unleashes this whole thing of...
anti-life, dimension, whatever, creature, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah. Now, and remember, this time we haven't seen a lot of the new gods. After Kirby went back to Marvel, we had a brief series with Jerry Conway and Don Newton. and the return of the new gods. And that was around 76, 77, because I remember the issue that I had of it had You Can Be in the Superman Movie thing on the cover. And,
and Conway used them in a JLA-JSA crossover story as well.
Absolutely. And I mean, so they had been around in sort of the mid to late 70s, and then they kind of went away for a little while. And that's why it was a big deal when Levitz used Darkseid in The Great Darkness Saga.
Yep.
And
because it was a surprise villain, you're like, what?
Totally, we hadn't seen him in ages, and he was seldom around his peeps, right? And so they did. I know they did a couple of, and you know, this was I was away from comics for a while at this time as well. So when I came back to them in with issue 3 of 5 years later, I was catching up on a lot of this kind of stuff, right? And so there were reprints of the Kirby New Gods, but there was also another new series of the New Gods that really didn't go anywhere and was not great. And so basically what we get is there's going to be a change in the physics of the universe. Nothing will ever be the same, Darren.
Ever again. No, we're going in a bold
new direction.
Exactly.
Take a drink. And so you basically had the you know, you bring all these characters together, and so you've got like Dr. Fate, you've got Etrigan, you've got Batman, you've got
Adam Strange is in this. Yeah. And, but the big one is, well, I mean, and Starfire's in this for some reason. None of the other Titans show up but her, because it's a space thing, I guess.
And that's why, yeah, totally.
Yeah, that's why. But the only thing that really stuck for me from this story was Jon Stewart's attitude. Because, well, let's go back in history again. Jon Stewart became one of the first DC characters who was African-American as a hero back in the 70s in the O'Neill run,
and Adams, Denny
O'Neill and Adams. Thank you. Thank you. The name was escaping me. I apologize. It's late and I haven't drunk anything and I still don't have a brain. So he comes on, and like all the other characters, and you can look at Tyrock for the most part as a complete copy. Yeah. Angry Black Man was all that was written for these characters.
Yeah.
That was all that they were. They showed up, they were angry, they left when they were still angry, everything was resolved, anger. It's like it's a one note character.
Yeah, very much tied into sort of the blaxploitation things that were very popular at the time.
Totally.
So, you know, there was representation, but it was often played off fairly stereotypical.
Totally.
And so you had them get divided into there were four planets. You had to deal with Thanagar, Ran, Earth, and Zanshi. So Superman and Orion are assigned Thanagar, Light Ray and Starfire are assigned Ran, Batman and Forager, because you know Batman, he's your guy.
To sell books, yeah.
Yes, and because
he makes complete sense for being in this book.
And if you're gonna have Mignola draw a DC superhero, true. Batman's a good one.
Well, and Wonder Woman wasn't around.
That's right.
Remember, we're in that vague area before Perez's Wonder Woman shows up. Really? Well, no, she was in Legends, but she's not really a.
Oh yeah, it's been 2 years. Yeah. But she's very much off to the side.
Totally. Off to the side, not part of the Justice League in any way, except for like one cover.
Yeah, very briefly with Justice League Europe, exactly. And so you had, and so of course, Batman calls an unknown person. He says he doesn't trust Darkseid. And so each team basically learns the location of sort of the aspect that they're supposed to deal with, et cetera, et cetera. But none of it matters, because the real thing is what happens is Martian Manhunter and Jon Stewart, their device gets destroyed by lightning. And so Stewart creates another of these aspect catcher devices with his power ring, and he goes to stop it. And basically does an I'm going to do this on my own.
Yeah.
And it's the hubris of it that makes this.
The hero almost, hubris.
Totally. And this is defining for Jon Stewart. Oh,
totally. Totally.
And,
yeah.
And so, this is what made him a much more interesting character, because before that he was a stereotype, and they did this, and basically he thinks that he's so sure that he can do it by himself, he encases John in with his power ring to prevent him from following him, and he fails, and the planet is destroyed.
Yep.
And because so,
wasn't the bomb on the inside of the planet all yellow?
Yeah, yeah.
That's
That's it. That's it. That was the realization.
What are you going to do? Yeah. You know?
And so yeah, there's other stuff, but it doesn't really matter, because that's the only thing that kind of hung stuck out from this beyond that. And
that was what stuck the landing on that series was Jon Stewart's character.
And it's the thing that.
Evolution.
Yes. You know? Yes. It's the thing that followed on. Nothing else really out of this really kept on. But what would happen is you would get, like, there was what that Green Lantern Mosaic, which was very short lived.
Where he was, it was, but he was doing his penance basically, because they took the survivors of the planet to a planet called Mosaic, because it was made up of all kinds of different beings.
Yeah.
But we're telling a story about racial, you know, togetherness.
Yeah.
Starring what used to be the angry black man who had no time for anybody else at all, because he was an angry black man, and now he's having to make amends for his ego, and trying to have to preach that, yes, we can all do this together to survive. That was the one thing that I think this book brought to the fore that was an interesting story.
And interestingly, because, for a lot of people, you know, for us, Green Lantern is Hal. Right.
Yeah.
Because but you know, there's a whole generation that grew up watching Justice League, and it's Jon Stewart. He's Green Lantern to them.
Totally.
And, which awesome. And, but you know what? The character that they met isn't the stereotypical version that we had. It's the guy who's learned his lessons the hard way.
Yeah.
Though they never got into that specifically.
They alluded to a little bit of it.
Yeah.
Because there was that early story about him blowing up that moon.
Yes, that's right.
With Kanjar Roe. So they alluded to that story in Justice League.
Yeah.
And it gave him, you could see that he was an angry character and trying to boss everybody around, like the first movie, you know, that 3-episode arc where they all show up together.
Yeah.
He calls Flash fool, you know, not instead of like helping him out, you know, so there's allusions to this whole story in that. And I think that made John a much more interesting character than Hal.
Absolutely.
So, you know.
Yeah, no, there was a lot, a lot to chew on with that character. Mm-hmm. And that's what he became. He became the guy who learned that, hey, pride groweth before the fall, right? And
totally.
And he managed to move on from that, for sure.
I will say this, though. Hal Jordan was the tannest of the white Super Friends.
Oh, yeah.
If you go back and look, the white ones, he was the tannest. No,
you're 100% right, yeah.
Coast City was in California, kids, and you should use sunscreen. I'm just saying.
Yeah.
So, are you ready for Invasion?
Yes.
Oh, my gosh. So, dear Lord, folks. Okay, there's a lot going on in Invasion.
And this one has huge Legion
ramifications for the Legion and the DCU. Yep. So, there's I want to give credit is due. DC Wiki and Wikipedia were my godsends today. So we're just going to read some of this stuff. After extensive research, a coalition of super scientist dominators and the warlike allies, the Coons, determined that humanity poses a threat to the rest of the universe. Although most other alien species are rather consistent and predictable, the amount of genetic diversity present in the human race has made them too powerful to allow continued existence.
Now, I'm just going to, before you get to the big reveal here, this is one where there are parts of it that are still in play.
Oh, yeah.
And so it, you know, it is very rare in that respect. But also, this is the first time that we have seen our Legion aliens
in the present day.
Yeah. You know, before that, they were aliens that just existed in Legion books. And
they were the Klingons of the Legion world.
Yeah. And now it's like they're part of the regular world. And of course, part of that is because the plotter of this series, Keith Giffen. It is also notable that it represents, I believe, the only DC work of Bill Mantlow.
Oh.
Bill Mantlow, who, you know, did some great stuff on the Hulk. You know, he was one of the first ones who did the whole splitting of Banner and Hulk and all that stuff. But and is a key part of what got me into comics in the first place, because he was the writer of the Micronauts series. It was Bill Mantlow and Michael Golden, and they just announced an artist edition of like that first 10 issues.
Aww.
I gotta get my hands on this. It's ridiculously expensive. I don't know what the fuck I'm gonna do, but I gotta have it because you're gonna plan
a heist. That's what you're doing.
And so Mantlow did the scripting of this, and it may have been, I'm not sure, because he suffered a horrible brain injury. He was rollerblading and got hit by a car. It was a hit and run. And
that's horrible.
And yeah, it's not far off this time frame, because I can remember reading Peter David's But I Digress column, and he talked about it. And and that would have been not far after Invasion happened. So this is one of his few bits of DC work, and so it's awesome in that respect, because I think he has a, in the context of these things, I think he's got a great gift for dialogue and story, and that's awesome. The artist on the first two issues, certainly the first issue, was Todd McFarlane. So he had been.
He's gonna make a name for himself someday.
Maybe. Any day now. and so he this was basically while he was working on this, he got the Marvel deal and the whole Spider-Man book. You know, if everyone remembers, like he went over and he did some Hulk stuff and he did some Spider-Man. And that was kind of what made his bones, like that Spider-Man book, like the adjectiveless Spider-Man that he did, you know, where it had 1,000 different covers and some of them went for hundreds of dollars and all that kind of stuff, because this was the beginning of the speculation boom. And soon after that, he left to form Image. You know, this is only a couple of years before that, right? So just something to keep in mind. And when he headed out, they got Bart Sears to replace him. And Bart Sears, of course, would later make his name in Justice League Europe.
Mm-hmm.
That was his book for a while, and then went on to do lots and lots and lots of other things. So I just wanted to sort of give some other bits of context. But yes, there is something about the human race.
Something. It's called a metagene.
Yes.
And then they can activate it. So the alien alliance, as they are referred to, consisted of the Dominators and the Coons, but also Thanagarians, the Gildishpan, which is Zamir's people.
Yeah.
Durlins, Cam's people. Daxamites. Oh, look at you, Valor. What? And from the Vagan star system, Scions.
Yeah. So bring Titans into it, yeah.
Yep. Warlords of Akara, who train Starfire.
Yes.
And most of the Omega Men. And the Citadelians.
Yeah.
You know, so this was like a, for lack of a better word, a who's who of alien races. And they're like, we're going to take advantage of this. Yeah, a huge deal.
Yeah.
So they're basically saying there's a strand in human DNA called the metagene that allows them to develop extraordinary powers under duress and become superheroes. I mean, we've seen that story before in a lot of Origins, so that's not a surprise.
And it was the interesting thing that the reason that getting hit by a lightning bolt through a bunch of chemicals didn't just kill Barry Allen. No, what it did is it activated his metagene.
Exactly.
So the idea was, and so people have compared the metagene to midichlorians, and I disagree. The idea was that the metagene was these people had this potential. They had these latent powers that needed something to bring them out. And so the reason that that these things, you know, had the giving them superpowers effect as opposed to the giving them death effect.
Yeah. yeah.
You know, that was kind of the key here. And so I kind of liked it as a storytelling device, and it gave them kind of, you know, there were heroes who got their metagene activated. There were heroes who got their metagene deactivated. And this was the smartest one of them all in the whole idea that the reason we do this event is, yes, to sell a bunch of our current books, but it is also to launch new books. That's what
new books and
do.
New ideas and all that stuff. Yeah.
And so you know, they set off the gene bomb.
Well, we're going to get to that.
Yeah.
Hang on.
Yeah.
Okay. Don't get ahead. Don't get ahead of the plot. Trust
slow
me.
Down, slow down.
It's good. It's good. Simmer down now. So basically the aliens show up and they tell the governments of the world, I'm assuming at the UN, hey, give us your superheroes or die. That's basically it.
Yeah.
And so the diplomats, they think until the aliens to drop dead. Ta-da. That's the first issue.
Yeah.
Basically,
awesome.
All these aliens getting together, deciding why they must take over Earth because Earth is a security risk to them.
Yeah.
And then invading a preemptive invasion, which we've never seen ever on Earth before. Oh, sorry. So,
but, you know, one of the things to think about with this is, I mean, McFarlane's work on it was stunning. Without a doubt. We got to see the Omega Man again and that sort of thing. I mean, and they weren't like regular sized books. Like they were
like 68 pages or something.
Yeah,
like that,
and they were thick.
Yeah,
they were square bound.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, so like the old checkerbox 100 page issues, they were done up like that. I mean, it was just great stuff.
So in issue 2, war rages across the world as heroes and villains alike fight to protect their homeland. Facing global genocide, many of the warriors are forced into a more serious and deadly arena of combat than ever before. Finally, a summit is held coordinating Earth's superhuman forces. Captain Atom is the commander of all the metahuman forces. Amanda Waller is in charge of intelligence and coordinating supervillains.
Yeah.
Wade Eiling is placed in charge of the military, and Maxwell Lord acts as official liaison to Justice League International. The tides turn in favor of the heroes as this rallying point gets them organized enough to start kicking ass and hitting where it hurts. Rioting at a Starlag led by Vril Dox and the Omega Men overthrows the guards at the cost of many casualties. Realizing that they are on the wrong side of the war, the Daxamites ally with Earth Command and turn on their collaborators, leading to a complete victory. It is a day of great triumph for our planet, as for once the many nations of the world were able to put aside their differences and unite against an external threat. Dun da da da.
Yes.
And so we do get metahumans. Yay. there's this as the quote unquote gene bomb went off over the world. This, of course, gave writers the ability to rewrite some origins.
Yeah.
And to huff up the powers most. Going back to the beginning of this episode, let's talk about a guardian of a global guardian, Green Flame. Remember Green Flame?
Remember Green Flame? Yes, I do.
She had the ability to whirl green flame from her mouth.
Yeah.
She could use it to propel herself through the sky, as I recall. And she could whirl it around her to change her costume. Green Flame ended. And she joined the Justice League International as Fire
yes.
with the same powers, but the gene bomb made her more into a green version of Johnny Storm. So she became a Human Torch-like analog after this, with much more oomph to her abilities, I would say. Making her more Justice League worthy, I would say.
Yeah, well, she was able to, instead of breathing fire, she was able to...
she could fire fireballs and... Yeah.
Yeah, so Beatriz Da Costa was, of course, her real name. And, sure. Sorry, I'm just trying to get the timeline right on her. So she changed her name to Fire, and so we had Fire, instead of Green Flame and Ice Maiden, we ended up with Fire and Ice. Yeah, exactly. So Pat Benatar was happy.
Love is a battlefield, Paul.
It really is. It really is. I mean, come on, hit me with your best shot, dude. Because I know she could still do that Human Torch thing, although she didn't do it a lot in JLI. She did a lot more sort of throwing fire, and that sort of thing. And that's interesting, because that set a whole lot of stuff in motion on the Justice League for sure. And of course, another example, and I mentioned this a couple of weeks ago with the blasters. Snapper Carr got superpowers, right? So, you know, he was always snapping his fingers. Now, when he would snap his fingers, he could teleport.
Yeah.
And so there's an example of sort of a minor character who was elevated a bit. Now he kind of disappeared for a long time and didn't show up again until the Hour Man series, but it's a whole other story.
So a lot of other stuff happened as a result of Invasion.
Yeah.
Whole lot of other stuff happened. You know what happened, Paul?
What happened, Darren?
Paul Kupperberg left Doom Patrol.
That's right, and some other guy came in.
Yeah, Grant Morrison came in to write Doom Patrol, so a lot of the Doom Patrol characters had to change. So Celsius, the ex-child bride of the Chief, depending upon who you believe, she died in this event. Karma... had left shortly prior to avoid being arrested. And I think he got killed in Suicide Squad at some point.
Yes, he did. Okay. I think in the Justice League Suicide Squad crossover, actually.
Okay. So Lodestone fell into a coma.
Yeah.
Negative Woman lost her powers. And Scott Fisher succumbed to his cancer. This basically cleared the deck for Morrison. Yeah. To have Robot Man, Negative Man, and Crazy Jane, and the Tempest Chief,
and so it went on with that, and we ended up with Rebus, which was Negative Man with
a lot of this stuff
kind of played into that, and Lodestone would actually turn up later in that series, completely differently.
Totally different. Disturbingly different.
Yeah. So it was basically his way. And I got to admit, I loved the Kupperberg series while Steve Lytle was drawing it.
Yeah.
And Jim would hate me for saying this. You know what? Eric Larson at the time, not my favorite. Again, he was not the Eric Larson at that time.
When he was doing Savage Dragon.
Well, when he started doing Savage Dragon, it was like, oh my God, this is amazing. But at the time that he was doing the Doom Patrol, it was not his finest work.
Agreed.
And you know what? But he was new. I mean, let's be real. You know, he would go on from there to work on Spider-Man and then become an Image founder. Yep. And you know what? I'll be honest. I also think that as much as I enjoy his art on Dragon, I like him more as a writer.
Because his
ideas are insane. And Morrison was coming into this book, and it was like, it was a good way to clear the deck and to do something really different and
really radical.
Yes, he did.
Totally.
Yeah.
Because I had to leave that book just because it was too much for me.
You know
at
what?
At the time, I was not a mature enough reader to handle it.
It took me years. And it was honestly, it was our boy Scott who was mm-hmm. like, dude, I love this book, and I think you could love it too. And and
I figures it would be Scotty because God knows the drugs that have been in that man. So
right. So so the Monkey Man, he's the one who finally convinced me to give it another try. And what I did is I actually started with the reading all of the original Doom Patrol stuff, like in the showcases. Mm. And then skipping over everything else and just going straight to Crawling from the Wreckage. And it was like, oh, there it is. Okay, I get it now.
did you skip the Teen Titans stuff then when they had that?
Well, because I'd already read that. So, I mean, that's still in the brain pan. But I was just looking at it because he said he always thought that it really captured the tone that Premiani and I should have this stuff in front of me. you know, the original guys who did Doom Patrol had, and he was right. You know, it was like he was doing Silver Age at a time when Silver Age just wasn't cool, mm-hmm. And so it ended up being a very different vibe. And yeah, you're right. It pushed me away too at the time.
Yeah. Yeah, our last bit here. Guess what else happened out of Invasion, Paul?
Could it be Legion?
That would be correct, Paul.
Yes! Victory.
So, yeah, we got the Legion, born entirely from the Invasion. Briniac 2 was taken from obscurity and updated as an adult. He teams up with a number of other Starlag prisoners, including the Durlan, Garen Beck, Lyrissa Malor, and Strata to form an intergalactic police force. This team has a lot of connections to the future LSH by lineage and by theme. So, yeah, we got Legion. So at some point, we're going to have to talk about them as a group and start issues.
And you know what else we got out of that was we got Barry Kitson.
Mm-hmm.
We had already seen him in that Legion annual with Colossal Boy, and which he said was his first American work. Uh-huh. And then he got this book where he was working with Giffen and Alan Grant writing the book. And I mean, that first run is stellar.
Totally.
I think the series kind of gets a little, you know, gets a little in the weeds and becomes sort of more and more of its time later on. And some of the artwork later on,
is kind of bad, yeah.
After Kitson left, is like, wow, this was cool at the time, I guess. Uh-huh. And you realize that you know some stuff doesn't age well. But I gotta say that Kitson stuff, it holds up.
Totally, it does.
Oh my god, it's just stunning. And of course, we had the Durlan, and the Durlan's a big deal, right? And we only have him for a little while, and then
we get him for like, I think maybe 8 issues.
And then he gets replaced by some amnesiac woman who can walk through walls and likes to run away.
I knew it. I knew it. Knew it. I was just sitting here waiting for him to figure out how to turn this into a running away joke.
Motherfucker.
Motherfucker from Hades. So, yeah. So those are our yada yada-ings. These groups. I mean, really, all Invasion left us with, besides a couple of runs of some really interesting books, was the metagene
concept. And it, like a lot of that is still in play, you know.
Oh, totally.
And so I don't think we can kind of, you know, and that is rare for one of these events to actually put something in play that lasts, and it has lasted through all sorts of reboots and whatnot, and still remains. And I think that is the kind of the big takeaway here.
I'm going to agree with you on that because I'm looking at the ones we're going to do in the next episode, and there's not a lot here that stuck.
Yeah.
Just FYI.
That's a thing, right? And
there's one big thing that is stuck, and that's it.
Yeah.
We'll get to that. next episode.
But I am looking at that Legion 89 issue, and you know, the future is now. Sign up today.
Uh huh.
God,
it's a great cover. It's a great cover.
Gorgeous. It's just, yeah. I'm excited to get back into that series because it's been a hot minute, and there is some great stuff there. And I just, you know,
when did that come out? 89.
Yeah.
So wasn't this like right as we were heading into the 5 year later?
It was a few issues in.
Okay.
Right, because if you'll recall, a lot of like.
Well, no, Strata appeared in the issue where Roxas kills Block.
She did, yeah.
So it had to have been going at that point, or they knew about her character at that point.
Well, yes, because she had already shown up. So Legion, I'm just looking for the cover date here. So of course that stands for Licensed Extragovernmental Interstellar Operatives Network.
Just call them SHIELD.
Yeah, basically.
Borrowed that little trick from the house across the street. I know 5 year later was in 88, 89. Like, yeah, well, was it October, November when it started?
So, okay. So, Legion, let's see here. I apologize.
No, we're so prepared.
We are so prepared.
It's a yada yada.
Couldn't. Yeah, exactly. What did you expect when we said yada yada?
we got 5 minutes to put this crap together. You're getting what you paid for.
Exactly. Refunds can line
refunds,
up.
Refunds. Yeah. Please email Matt Kramer at.
Yes.
He's going to get email and go, what the hell did they do?
Like, how did they find this email address? Okay, so Legion 89, cover date was February 1989.
Okay, so they must have known about.
So that makes it 12 years ago.
yeah.
I kid. So that was the cover date. So February 89, it was actually like December 88, right? Because
okay. So they must have known that they were going to tie Strata and Rock and Block together as the same race, basically.
Well, yeah. I mean, you know, the idea was that Giffen wanted a dryad in that title, right? And so, again, we had brought all of the bad races in, the bad alien races in during Invasion, and now what he wanted to do was bring the good ones back in, right?
Mm-hmm.
So,
true. True.
Yeah, so let's see here. Volume 4... Oh, they're killing me. They're not gonna make me do this, are they? Are they really killing you? They're so killing me.
Killing me, Smalls. You're killing me.
Yeah, yes. All right, cover date. Okay, so November 89. So it was 9 months later.
Okay.
So if
that's reasonable. Yeah.
If Legion 89 number one had been impregnated, its offspring would have come out in just in time for 5 years later.
That's funny.
That is how far in we were. So at some point in there, we actually had the switcheroo happen. So by the time we got to issue one, people had already seen that phase switcheroo.
Yep.
And so that's why we saw it referenced in like issue two. And so there we go.
So some of the deaths, just so we have this recorded for Invasion. Yes. Celsius, we mentioned Gargwax, who was a Doom Patrol villain, I think.
Yes.
Daran 2, who was a Green Lantern, and Medfil, it was an apparent death, not really dead. So
he got better. Oh.
Take a drink! I was hoping you'd do that.
Indeed.
So, remember, we just talked about the New Guardians. Well, Jet from the New Guardians died in Invasion.
I'm just impressed that the New Guardians were actually around long enough to be used in this series.
background. Just background.
Yeah, of course.
Kel Gand, who of course was Mon-El's dad.
Yes.
Of the Omega Men, Felicity, Green Man, Primus, and Yinda all died. And that was like Primus was their leader starting off.
Yes.
Omega Man. So that was kind of a big thing for them. Rudy West, who I think is a Flash.
Got better.
Better.
Yeah.
And Scott Fisher, who we mentioned from Doom Patrol. Most of the current Doom Patrol had died at that point.
Yeah, exactly. Another thing just to you hit on something there. And
of course, Fire was in a coma. A lot of people got into a coma because their metagene activated.
Yeah, and that was a thing. So. And there were lots of different crossovers into it. Even Swamp Thing, who had been shuffled over to the mature readers area, this is still pre-Vertigo, had an Invasion crossover.
Yep.
I don't remember the train of thought I was going on as you were going through the death list. But a lot of characters who were kind of shuffled off, but also it activated a lot of characters, and it kind of gave them a paradigm for giving them powers.
Truth.
And that's
kind of like how you get X-Men.
That's an interesting point. So the other day, talking with the kids, and they're talking about different superheroes, and they're asking about what's the difference between a mutant and a superhero.
Ooh.
And I was saying, part of it is that they have the power that kind of activates, later on, and often it was, it was equated to puberty, essentially, like the thing that they had, that latent mutant power that activated during puberty.
Mm-hmm.
And ties into a lot of the kind of the youth feeling different and feeling like another idea, and which it gets fleshed out even further later on. And I said, so that's kind of where, the mutant idea, because if we remember, Captain Comet was a mutant.
Yep.
And the idea of that being it that is something where they have evolved on a different level and they have this ability. The metagene kind of straddles that line, right? Because it needs something to activate it.
It gives a reason for a character who would not be able to survive something that would normally kill someone without that gene. So you could reverse that and say Captain America has a metagene. Undergoing that super soldier serum would have killed other people.
And had, if I remember.
And had before, right? So he was able to endure the changes in his body because of the metagene and the stress put on his body.
Yeah.
He's like the first example in Marvel I can think of as a metagene survivor. You also talk about the Fantastic Four.
Absolutely. They
were metagenes, right? So, and I think it was actually something that was brilliantly illustrated in the movie.
Yeah.
They all reacted to the things that they were trying to do at the time they got hit with the cosmic ray storm.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And that I think is a great application of it. And it's just great that you said that, that is one. That is the one brilliant thing that came out of that movie, and it is. And I think that we need to remember that sometimes, that there are gems even in things that aren't overall fantastic.
Agreed.
If you'll pardon the use of the word.
The pun there.
The double dip. Yeah. I think that is a story device that has stuck around.
Oh, totally.
Ever since, and also it was the thing that brought the future alien races into the present day, and thus kind of expanded the DC cosmic universe.
I thought you were talking about Ben Grimm there for a second. The Thing.
Yes. I love you, Chiklis.
I mean, a lot of their heroes over at Marvel are metagene, Spidey, Hulk.
Yeah. Yeah,
I mean,
it's all
there's
there.
A lot of that. There's a lot of that in Marvel. So DC just was like, oh, well, we need to make this a thing.
Yes, let's put a name on it, and so, still kind of . So this one had of a lot of the late 80s and early 90s events. This is one that actually had some staying power.
Totally.
One other thing, and this goes back to the New Guardians in Millennium. One thing I forgot to mention is Tara was actually supposed to be one of them, but of course had died too
soon. Oh, yeah, she had killed herself off because she crazy.
She cray. Yeah, exactly.
She was cray-cray.
All right, sir, I think we have yada-yadded our brains out.
I think we have. Yeah. That was a good yada-yadding.
Exactly. We got ourselves...
We'll do more yada-yadding next week.
Yes. Yes, for episode 597. Not 497, as I might be tempted to say.
We need to talk about what we're going to do for 600. 600's coming.
It is coming very soon.
Is a coming. Is a coming.
Oh, my goodness. Can you believe it?
I know, right?
Right? All right.
Right?
Let's wrap up.
Let's do it.
You've got to get to work tomorrow, and I got kids waking up early. All right. Comments, as always, are welcome at legionofsubstitutepodcasters@gmail.com. You can join in the conversation on our Facebook, which is facebook.legionofsubstitutepodcasters.com. We are on the Twitter. We are LOSP Podcast. And in addition to all those things, you can head over to our website, legionofsubstitutepodcasters.com, where you can leave a comment on this or any episode. And with that, we make our way back into the time bubble, and it's going to be a little wobbly because we got that Armageddon 2001 coming up.
No!
And we're going to have to make a phone call to see whether or not Robin gets to live or die. And we will see you all next week.
Captain Adam did it.